Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of Dive Deep with James Salvis. So tonight's episode is going to be called The Life of a College Athlete. And joining me is my very good friend, Christina McKivergan, of the women's basketball team here at Linden. Christina, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
So, Christina, I have some questions for you tonight to maybe help better people's understandings of the daily life of a college athlete. Mm-hmm. Christina, so why did you choose Linden?
Linden was kind of a toss-up for me. So
initially, it was mostly about basketball, and I really wanted to play basketball in college. That was always the main goal just from when I was young. But then the exercise science program actually really sold me here. We have an amazing exercise science program with two accreditations from NSCA and ACSM. And I really love it here. I love the environment, but basketball is just a bonus on top of all of that at Linden.
Okay. Yeah, I think, you know, I've heard nothing but good things about our exercise science department. So what is some advice you could give to a freshman just starting in college athletics?
Ooh, that's a good one. I would say manage your time wisely and dedicate as much time as you can to your craft of the game. Basketball specifically for me, that's the only sport I can really speak to. I think just in general, working hard, being a good teammate, that goes such a long way. Having positive energy, because the second you're negative, it's going to influence you. It's going to influence your whole team. Staying positive, happy, because maybe as a freshman you might not have a chance, but as you progress to be an upperclassman, if you keep that same energy, you might get your spot, you might earn your spot. It's just, it's really hard to manage. I know there's a lot of things going on as a freshman, but you just gotta kind of go head first into the deep end, basically, as a just a metaphor for what you should do. And that's really it. You just gotta communicate, time manage, and be a good teammate.
Yeah, I think that that's a big thing for making people successful at the college level is just, I don't think they understand, like, how much kind of a toll that takes. Mm-hmm. Christina, my third question is, what has been the most difficult part of being a college athlete so far?
Ooh. Most difficult part, for me personally, I've had a little bit of an unconventional time here at Linden. So for me, my freshman year, I was plagued by injury. I was out my whole season, with a broken ankle / completely ruptured ligament. So I think mentally coming back from that, it was really difficult. What was the question again?
The question was, what has been the most difficult part of being a college athlete?
Right. That's where I was going. Oh my gosh. So difficulty, knowing, again, like, back to the time management piece, when we're in season, we're with our team for, like, 30 hours a week, and getting to know your teammates well, having good team chemistry, because if you're with some people for 30 hours a week, you better get along well with them, especially if they're your teammates. I think that's probably the most difficult part, is adjusting to that team environment, knowing you're going to be around the same, you know, 15 people for months and months on end, which there's nothing wrong with that. We get extremely close, but at the same time, you know, there might be bumps in the road when that happens, especially in the beginning when you're spending so much time together. Physically, too, the demand of it, you know, at least 2.5 hours a day of practice, plus lift, plus film, plus team bonding, whether that be team dinners or just other recreational activities we might do. It takes up a lot of your time, and with schoolwork on top of that, especially my major not being exactly light with the workload, it takes a lot of, I guess, mental toughness, really, to get through it.
Yeah, being in exercise science, I think, is very, very difficult, because
yes.
I don't think people understand, like, how hard it is for you guys, like,
right.
in that major as a whole to, you know, kind of time manage things, and, like, you know, you know as well as I do, we go on the road a lot.
For
and
sure.
So it's tough.
Definitely.
Who has impacted you the most to continue sports after high school? It's kind of a tough question, I know.
Ooh, let me think on this one for a sec. Impacted me the most. That's a good question. Oh my gosh. I don't want to answer with this, but I almost want to say myself. Because for me, it was never anyone else pushing me as a child or anything like that. Like, I had supportive people all throughout my years growing up playing basketball, but it was always a goal driven by myself to play in college. And now that I am, you know, post high school, it's still my own goal that I strive to do. So I'm not really playing for someone else. I really just want to play for myself. So I can't really put a name to anyone specifically. Like, obviously, there's so many people in my college career so far that have supported me, like, including my coach, my parents, my siblings, my friends, whomever it may be. Even the people that just come out and support our games at Linden. But I can't put a specific name. I want to say, like, I do it for myself.
That's a really good answer, and I don't think that's one that's going to be commonly shared. Is themselves. I think, you know, a lot of people are going to say, like, you know, a parent or a guardian, you know, somebody bigger in their, you know, like, maybe personal lives,
right,
than, you know, their basketball lives. Because people, right, are different outside of, you know, school, obviously.
Right. And it's not to discredit any of those people. Like, they're still incredibly impactful in my playing and in my life. It's just, it's not my purpose to play for them, if that makes sense.
Exactly. No, it makes total sense, and that's a great answer. That's everything I was expecting. does being at a small school and competing at the Division III level give you more of a drive to get better, or do you think it hurts your growth as a player?
For me personally, especially after having competed for one season now, I know what I'm up against, so I think that helps my drive to get better. I know where the competition level is at. It's a little more difficult as a freshman because you don't necessarily know quite what you're jumping into yet. So I would say for me, it helps my drive to get better. I could see it going the other way, though, in terms of, it's only D3, as some people say, or it's a small conference, it's Vermont, it's a small school. But for me, you can also take it as, like, big fish in a small pond type of saying, because you just want to be the best, and I'm just a very competitive person at heart, so no matter what, whether I'm at a small school, big school, I'm going to want to do well and compete as best I can.
Exactly, and I think that the small school environment kind of, you know, makes that drive bigger for most people, whether it's, I think, male athletes, female athletes, it doesn't matter. I think the drive is just more intense for, you know, maybe people at smaller schools, whereas, like, you know, D1, you have people on scholarship, and,
right,
you know, you don't have scholarships here, so people, yeah, are literally competing for themselves.
Exactly, yeah, that's a big thing. Like, we don't have the money piece, we don't have, like, necessarily something to look forward to athletically after college. Like, for, like, this is kind of the end of the road in some ways, and, you know, you just want to go out best you can.
Exactly, and that's a really good point. Like, a lot of times, I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but a lot of times people from this level, like, you know, at the Division III level, don't go on to play professional basketball. Absolutely. But sometimes, you know, there's cases where it does happen.
Duncan Robinson, yeah.
Exactly. Duncan Robinson, that's a great point. For those of you listening to this that don't know who Duncan Robinson is. So Duncan Robinson, he plays for the Miami Heat now. He went to Williams University in, yeah, New York.
Division III, and played a season there before transferring,
yes,
out, right?
Yes, he did. Yeah. He played a season at Williams College. It's either in Massachusetts or New York. I'm not sure. I should know.
It's somewhere. I think it's in Mass. I think it's near Boston. Maybe not. I don't know.
I believe it is. I think you're right.
Yeah.
But anyways, he went to Williams College and played there for a year, and he did so well that he actually transferred to Michigan University, or the University of Michigan.
Yep.
And played there for the rest of his college career and helped lead them to a Final Four appearance, mm-hmm, in his tenure. So it just goes to show that things like this do happen. It's just very much not common. And I think Duncan Robinson is a story about that. And he also went undrafted into the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he's one of the best three-point shooters in the NBA, in my opinion.
Yep.
And he has, you know, just showed that even though you went to a small school, you can go to D1 and you can go to the NBA and you can make a career for yourself. And now that guy's making millions of dollars and he's played in two NBA finals.
That's right. Yeah.
What's it like being a college athlete? I know that's kind of a hard question. You can take that however you want.
Okay. Yeah. In terms of being on the Linden campus, I feel like there's a really good community. All the athletes really know each other. Everyone hangs out. Everyone knows each other's names, whether they think you do or you think they don't. So I think that part of it, in terms of being a college athlete, there's just a nice like vibe to it, really. In being a small school, knowing everyone from other teams. In terms of just being a college athlete in general, I think it's difficult at times. It's also extremely rewarding. Even though like our women's basketball team, we were just under 500 last season, I still think like we left the season with our heads held high. And just the competitive aspect to it, because it's just so good for me personally, my mental health. Having something to go to, especially in a small school like this, there might not be much to do. Basketball takes up all of my time pretty much outside of school. And, you know, a couple hours a week I might work or whatnot. But it's just a great environment. It's really difficult mentally to stay on top of things. But, you know, it's not fun if there's no challenge to it. So.
Exactly. I think the work ethic part of it and, you know, the hard work bit of it is kind of what makes people come back. And so I think that, you know, that's, I think, a testament, like I said, to the people that want to do it and what makes being a college athlete kind of more difficult sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
What I will say, though, is your team in the last 6 years or 7 years is the only team that's been 500.
Yep.
So I think that that's a testament to the job that Ben Arsenal has done and to Sean Lynch, the coach before him, have, you know, done kind of building the program. I know Ben mm-hmm. took over after Sean, and it was kind of, you know, it wasn't necessarily Ben's team when he first got here, but I think he did a good job of kind of
reconstructing
and kind of, you know, moving forward with what Sean started. Because,
definitely.
As you know, there were some great athletes that played here for Sean.
Yep.
And Michaela Hodge, who was
insane,
one of the best, probably the best women's basketball player ever here.
That's right.
Yeah. A future Hall of Famer mm-hmm. at this college. Played for Sean Lynch, and she helped lead, you know, the women to some playoff appearances and some playoff wins at a time when Linden wasn't really known for that necessarily.
Right, absolutely.
And the women, even in recent years, have made the playoffs the last two seasons.
We did.
Same with the men, including a playoff win.
That's right. Yeah.
And, you know, unfortunately it didn't go well in the playoffs for you guys this past season, but
yep.
I think you're past that and ready to build on this season, and hopefully that will
absolutely
turn into a deep run in the playoffs.
Absolutely. We will make it past first round. I'm saying it right now. We're making it past first round, while just in February.
All right, Christina, I'll hold you to that.
Good.
I'll hold you to that in February.
Good. As you should.
Christina, we travel a lot, as you know. Like, I help out with the men's basketball team
mm-hmm.
at Linden here. So I travel every time we go on the road. So, it you know, it takes a lot out of me, too. So
for sure.
How does traveling and being on the road so much impact your studies?
Oh, my gosh. It is so hard to do homework on the bus. You kind of just got to power through, honestly. It sucks because you're exhausted. You might not be able – you want to sleep on the bus, or if you're coming home from a game. If you're going there, you want to do homework because it's the weekend and you need to either get ahead or just do something that's due, because especially, again, extra science, I always have something to do. But it's incredibly difficult because if, let's say, we have a Friday, Saturday away at a conference – or conference match, rather. I got to get all my homework in by Thursday for the week. And having to manage that on top of practice, because I don't want to have homework while I'm on the road, it's really difficult. But in terms of the bus rides, those can be incredibly draining, not just academically, but also, I'd say, for our performance on the road.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think that it's not only just draining for your performance on the road, it's also just mentally draining.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially, like, as people don't know, we play at the University of Maine at Presque Isle. And if you've never been to Presque Isle, Maine, that place is, like, way up in the middle of nowhere, Maine, up at the top of Maine. Yep. Not to knock on Umpy, if on the off chance anybody from there hears this.
Right.
But not to knock on Umpy, but
it's that so is an, far away for us.
It is. It's an absolute awful bus ride, too. But Christina, I forgot, you'll get to experience that Umpy trip for the first time.
I can't wait.
This will be my second Umpy trip of my career. So hopefully second and final. But so you'll get to experience that for the first time.
Oh, gosh.
And folks, for those of you that don't know, UMaine Presque Isle is about a 10 or so hour bus ride from here, 8 to 10 in that area.
Yep.
So traveling basically all night long, get to your hotel, you just want to sleep.
Men's and women's teams together, too, on the same bus. Oh, my gosh.
Yes, that's how usually for conference games, when the men and women's team travel on the road, they travel together. So I think that that's always fun, too, because we talk to you guys talk to us. Sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah.
We don't go to the same restaurants, though.
That's true.
We do not. I think that the men and the women, the food that they like is a lot different.
Dave has his own preferences.
He sure does.
Yeah.
Dave and Ben are completely different.
For sure.
Those of you that don't know, Dave is the men's coach. Ben is the women's coach. Right. What is the most memorable game or moment of your career? It could be high school, college, AAU, anything.
Ooh, I'm going to do one from AAU and then one from college. AAU, I guess I had a lot of decent performances in AAU, but I specifically remember being in middle school, and I had this insane game against a team that was, like, a year or two older than I was. I would always play up. I think I had, like, 35 points or something like that with a bunch of assists. And because that game sparked me, I was like, I know I'm capable of doing this. And, like, I would consistently perform well, but just having that boost of confidence, having a really good game, just helped, like, I knew I had it in me, and that helped propel me, like, through high school and sticking with it through high school, because I didn't exactly have a conventional high school career. That's, yeah, not conventional whatsoever. So now on to the college piece of it. My most memorable college moment, probably our series against Umpy at home. Our point guard was out. My first game, I had to play the point guard role, and I had not had to do that all season, and I also had not played point guard in about 3 to 4 years. I was more of a shooting guard, so trying to step up into that role while we were down players against a team that was kind of make or break for us making playoffs that last series, and we pulled out a win with me at point. I'm not saying that's my accomplishment. It's a whole team thing. I'm just really proud that I was able to do that and I was able to support the team that way. And then the next game we did unfortunately lost, but I personally had a good game. I had a career high. So that's probably my most memorable college moment.
Yeah, you did. You had a really good series. Mm-hmm. That, you know, those 2 days we played Umpy. Unfortunately for the men, I should say, we did not come out of that with the same.
Right.
You know, needed those games for us. Fortunately, we still made the playoffs, but mm-hmm. lost 2 to Umpy at home to end the season was not, you know, to end the regular season was not really ideal.
Definitely.
But you played some really good games and stepped up in a big spot for them, and I think that, you know, you worked so hard to get to that point, especially, like you said, with your high school being a non-conventional career.
Oh, yeah.
Christina, who is your biggest inspiration for the game of basketball? I know I kind of asked that earlier, but I know this is kind of a different question.
Okay, actually, I do have a person. It's got to be my older brother, Mark. He is almost 29 years old, and the reason I answer him is because I watched him play growing up. I remember being in the gym at like 2 years old watching his youth basketball games, and he played through high school, and for me being the younger sister, I always wanted to compete against him, especially because he's so much older than me. I just always looked up to him. So I just thought it was so cool that he was capable of playing basketball and being so athletic and all these things, and he was just kind of my biggest inspiration to keep going. And I got so good just, you know, 1v1 driveway battles against him. It was that's definitely my biggest inspiration, is my oldest brother, Mark.
And Christina, add on to that, what is your career record against him in one-on-one?
I mean, he's about 6'3", and, you know, I did beat him in ones this past weekend when I saw him, actually. That might be the first time ever, I can't even lie. When he was more in his prime, it wasn't even close. I was also only probably about 9 years old at that point. But, yeah, he was incredibly good, like, dunking at age 13, running 5-minute miles, just the most athletic kid you have ever seen. I wish he had gone further than high school. He would have been an amazing college athlete. But, yeah.
Unfortunately, for some people, they don't have the same passion about sports that you do. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think that that's a biggest thing, like a bigger thing of being at this level too. Like, we kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, but being at this level makes you more humble. I feel like it really makes you more humble. It makes you appreciate the game more. It makes you appreciate your time more, because a lot of people at the D1 level, they have option. Even the worst D1 players, most of the times, if they're really passionate about their sport, they're going to play it overseas at some level. They're going to play it professionally at some level. Mm-hmm. So for a lot of, you know, even average D1 athletes, they have, you know, plans after college for their games.
Definitely.
And for their careers, whereas here it's kind of it.
I was going to say, yeah, D3 specifically, it is humbling. I feel like maybe not as a freshman, because you feel like, oh, I'm, you know, a big college athlete. I know at least some freshmen feel that way. But once you get to your senior year, I mean, I'm a junior, so I'm not there yet, but I think you look back and you appreciate, and you're just extremely grateful for the experience that you've had.
Absolutely. Like, I tell my friends about this all the time. You know, I met a lot of my friends on the basketball team here my freshman year, mm-hmm. and even the ones that have graduated, I still talk to this day. And it feels like I've known them and been friends with them for my whole life.
Right.
And I've only known them for 3 years or 4 years. So, you know, it just goes to show, like, the relationships that you build at the college level, you know.
Definitely.
You meet new people, you know, you start, you know, relationships with people, you know, whether it's a significant other, whether it's a friend, you know, you just start, mm-hmm. you know, college is a place for new beginnings. And one thing I think that's tough about being in college is, I think if college aged kids were 25 to 30 years old, I feel like you would see a lot higher graduation rate around the board.
Yep.
And you would see people, like, because nobody from 18 to 22 years old
knows what they want to do with their life.
Exactly. Yeah. Nobody knows what they want to do with their life. Like, I have a career plan. Like, I want to be a sports commentator. I've wanted to do that since I was, you know, 7 or 8 years old, and it's all I've ever wanted to do, and I can't see myself doing anything else because I don't think I would be good at anything else. But not everybody has that passion, and not everybody has it figured out by the time that they're, you know, 21, 22 years old. So I think if, you know, they're later in life, because a lot of people are having kids from 25 to, you know, 30 years old, they're starting to settle down, they're starting to really, you know, get their life figured out with their careers. So I think if more people went to college later, they would be a little bit more successful.
It's possible. Yeah, it is possible.
Christina, how do you modify your daily routine during the season?
Early mornings and late bedtimes, unfortunately. We tend to have some late practices, so that's a modification, not one that I can really control. It just kind of happens. Studying in every spare moment that I have. So, you know, out of season, I might have, like, an hour break between classes. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to, you know, sit on the couch on my phone or something like that, you know, not do anything, just chill out. When that hour of time in between classes is in season, I'm doing homework, I'm doing something productive. I have literally no time to waste in my day because practice takes up so much time. Let's say we have a 2-hour practice. One, we have to be there 15 minutes early for stretching, because practice itself starts at whatever time. Let's say it's 6 to 8. Practice itself starts at 6. Warm-up is at 5:45. Before that, if you need heat, stim, something from the trainer, you got to get there about 45 minutes early. So that 5:45 is now 5 o'clock at least. And after that, you end practice at 8. You want to get ice? Okay, it's another 20 minutes. So you're really in the gym for, you know, 3 to 4 hours. It takes a huge chunk out of your day. You think it's just a 2-hour practice, but it's just a big commitment. So in terms of modifying this, my schedule, literally, yeah, every spare second of time that I have, I'm doing homework or something that I need to do for my day so I can go to bed at a decent hour and wake up at a semi-normal hour.
I feel like that's the hard, like one of the harder things of being a college athlete is when we're on the road, we don't eat well.
Oh, no.
We do not eat well. Like, and I'm not saying it's the coach's fault. We kind of have to take what we can get for options. Like, but you've seen it. We go to pizza places a lot. We go to like barbecue restaurants a lot.
And D3 specifically, there's unfortunately quite a bit of budgeting when it comes to food.
Yes, we don't have like, you know, the same money that a lot of D1 schools have where they can just pay for, you know, they can go to a steakhouse every time they go on the road.
Yeah, I wish.
and things like that. We don't have that luxury here. Mm-hmm. So we have to kind of, and you know, it's late night runs to Cumbies or wherever from practice. So I feel like people's diets aren't as healthy, you know, and I mean, I don't want to speak for everybody, but I think as a college athlete, you're not eating very good most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends. Me, like, living off campus now, at least I can have that choice for myself and get my own stuff a little easier than when I was living on campus. But it's still a lot harder because it's all about convenience, and it's not really convenient to, you know, cook a healthy meal when you don't have time.
I also think another reason why people don't eat healthy is because, you know, it just doesn't, like, it's so expensive.
It can be.
It can be really expensive to eat healthy. So it's like sometimes it's easier to just go to McDonald's.
That's true.
Than go to Price Chopper and eat.
All about convenience.
It is. And I mean, I'm sure that there's D1 athletes. I'm sure D1 athletes eat at McDonald's too. But I'm saying when we go on the road for sports and we eat at a McDonald's, I'm sure that there's not a lot of D1 programs in the country that when they go on the road are eating at a fast food restaurant.
Right.
Unless it's like, you know, they walk there on their own or they go there on their own. Yeah. I don't think that it's common.
Or having to bring their own money for a trip to the gas station when we're on the road as a pit stop.
Yes. And you know as well as I do, there's plenty of late night gas station trips when we're at hotels on the road.
Yep.
And that's actually one thing I look forward to about going on the road is the late night gas station trips with the fellas.
Everyone does.
It's a great time. You guys tag along with us.
We do. We do. Yep.
Christina, I have another unrelated, un-college-related question for you.
Sure.
So you're a big Celtics fan.
I am.
Christina, do you have any predictions or any aspirations as to what the Celtics are going to accomplish this season?
Oh, boy. I'm still a little sad about seeing Smart go. I can't lie. I like Porzingis. Rephrase. Porzingis could be good in terms of having the height that we need and having a true big down low. But Smart defensively and the energy that he brought to the team, being the longest tenured player, was absolutely unmatched, and he facilitated the offense so well. I know people who are non-Celtics fans always argue, well, look at his stats. Like, he did not improve significantly in the 8 years that he was there. I completely beg to differ. You can't put everything on paper as a stat. And he also won Defensive Player of the Year for the first time, the first guard since Gary Payton. So, that being said, we're really going to miss him on the Celtics. Hopefully, Derek White at point, can help lead them to something big. I always like Tatum and Brown on the floor together. So I'm hoping for, you know, that one seed, but the Celtics always find a way to maybe not make it like that, but I'm sure they're going to pull out this year. I'm feeling pretty confident if they can just get it together and know how to run a decent offense with a true big, I think they can really use that.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And people may find it crazy. I'm actually not a Celtics fan. As big a Red Sox fan as I am and as big a Patriot and Bruins fan as I am, I'm not actually a Celtics fan. Celtics have always been my second favorite team. I'm a LeBron fan. So I've followed him pretty much throughout his whole career. He's who made me love basketball. He was kind of my idol as a kid. He's my all-time favorite athlete. And I've appreciated what he's done. But in terms of the Celtics, I have one more question for you about that.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Joe Mazzulla? Because personally, I thought that he was some of the Celtics' problems last year, and I think his decision-making is awful. And frankly, I don't know if he's a long-term solution for the Celtics as a head coach.
So I don't absolutely hate Joe Mazzulla. I would see in my like Instagram feed or whatnot, you know, so much hate against him when the Celtics would lose, something would happen. I don't think ever any loss can be completely blamed on a coach. The coach will always say, like, oh, it's my fault, blah, blah, blah. I don't believe that. At the same time, I have seen some things. I'm like, why would you make that substitution at that time? Why would you call an ISO play for Tatum when he's 0-for-8 in the last 10 minutes? You know, stuff like that. So I also don't necessarily think he's a long-term solution, but I also like that he's young and he can relate to the players and that he's learning with them. So I think he's going to improve as a coach. I really do.
Yeah, I think that he has a lot of potential. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, and Mazzulla was a great college player too. And
right.
He might have, I don't think he ever played in the NBA.
I don't believe so.
But I know he was a good college player.
Right.
Whereas, you know, their old coach, Ime Udoka, did play in the NBA.
I liked Ime a lot, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, he's on the Rockets now. I don't know who would want that job, but clearly Ime Udoka. Christina, do you have any what do you think is for the Celtics? What do you think they need to do to finally get past the Miami Heat?
Oh my goodness. I say not play ISO ball so much. I like that Tatum wants to facilitate and be the guy and, you know, put up 40 a game, but I think we need some team basketball. And on top of that, finding a way to shut down Jimmy Butler and then realizing that there's also a guy named Bam Adebayo in the paint.
And then there's also shooters like Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero Max Strus.
Yeah. Isn't Strus gone? Was he traded?
I don't know. He might have been.
He might have been. Either way, they do have shooters. That's undeniable.
Gabe Vincent.
Yes, that's true. He had a really good breakout performance against the Celtics, actually. Shutting down the Heat, I really think they need to play some team basketball. I kind of hate the NBA nowadays in some ways because it's so, like, so much of, like, a show. They're really putting on a show. They want to, you know, wants to be a spectacle, and I just want to see, like, imagine how a college team plays. Like, if you went down the floor and you pulled a shot that was contested with 25 left on the shot clock in college, you'd be put on the bench right away. Probably regardless if you made it or not. It's not a smart shot, you know? It's not team basketball. And I kind of wish the NBA was more like that still. And it's really migrated from not being like that.
Exactly. And one more thing that I'll bring up here. And I know the WNBA doesn't get a lot of viewership. And you know where I stand on women's sports. I think that, you know, I'm a big advocate for them. And I think that they should get more love than they do. But I'll get into that in a later episode of the podcast. But like when I watch WNBA basketball and even like college is kind of steering closer to the NBA, at least for D1 men's basketball.
A little bit.
But like you watch women's basketball and they are the most fundamental basketball players. They're all good ball handlers.
Absolutely.
They're all good free throw shooters. They're all good 3-point shooters. Like they're all like so they can all like they know proper defense.
Yes.
Like it's so watching a WNBA game and you see more fundamental skill. I mean, not the NBA players. I mean, they could do it too.
Definitely.
It's just you see more like fundamental team basketball in the WNBA.
Yes.
Like with skilled defenders around the board, skilled shooters, skilled ball handlers, skilled defenders.
And that's why people who only follow the NBA, who only, you know, follow college for March Madness, who don't really know basketball, who just see it as a show, they think it's, you know, terrible basketball as the WNBA because it's not like, oh, they can't dunk. You know, they're shooting with a smaller ball. That's always a weird argument that I found.
The three-point line's closer.
Yeah, that's one, too. It's only, like, a foot closer, also. It's really not that big of a difference. It's still, like, I don't understand how people can discredit how impressive it is. And as someone who has such a vast basketball background, being able to see them play so fluidly as a team, it's just so impressive. And not to say it's not impressive that the NBA players do because they're so incredibly athletic, but women, just the WNBA, they really know how to play team basketball. They know. And I don't even think the men fundamentally can play like that, which is not a good or bad thing. It's just people like to see the NBA. They like to see, you know, dunking and all these things versus, you know, good fundamental basketball.
All right, Christina, I have one more question for you.
Sure.
Before this episode's over.
All right.
So I've had arguments with this about my friend, like with my friends. 3-point contest. Who are you taking? Steph Curry or Sabrina Ionescu?
I'm sorry, it's Steph Curry.
Exactly. Yeah, thank you. I wanted to hear this from a woman's perspective.
It is Steph Curry. She's an incredible shooter. I do think it would be close. It would be within like 3-4, something like that. Not like super close, but Steph is winning. He's the best shooter of all time. I can't say.
Yeah, like that's the argument I made. I was like, because one of my friends was like, oh, you know, they're shooting. And I'm like, I hope you realize the NBA 3-point line is 4 feet further than the WNBA line. I looked it up. It's 3 feet.
Really?
It's at least 3 feet.
We're going to fact check that one later.
But it's at least 3 feet. You can fact check me right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, let me look this up right now. I got my phone in front of me.
It is at least 3 feet.
It's not 3 feet further because the international line that we shoot from is only like a foot and a half closer. I'm pretty sure. I'm checking right now.
Look up how far apart the WNBA line is from the NBA line.
NBA.
Because yep. I could be wrong, but I feel like it said 3 feet when I looked it up.
I don't know about that. Let's see. No, the WNBA, the three-point line, the WA is positioned 22 feet and 1.25 inches away, and the NBA, 23 feet, 9 inches. So it's about a foot and a half.
It's 23.9 inches in the corners, 25 on the wings, and at the top of the key.
I don't think it's 25. Wait.
It's definitely 25 on the wings. Because I remember saying it was only a foot short, like a foot closer, like a foot difference in the corners, but on the wings it was further.
No, so at the wings, it's 22, 1.75, and then 23.9.
So
and then 22 feet at the corners in the NBA.
So it's about 2-ish feet further on the wings than it is. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like a big difference. It's not like, huge. You know, they're shooting 10 feet closer than they are in the NBA.
Right.
But the point to why I say Steph would just win is because Steph shoots from 40 feet beyond the basket and knocks it down like it's nothing.
Right.
Like, Steph could shoot from 35 feet and make 10 straight.